Okay, I call this special meeting to order. It is May 28th, 2021. We've noticed this for doing two work sessions and in the meeting, which I don't know, just seems a little different than normal as opposed to having work sessions separately. And then, but also as part of the meeting to actually take an action and do a notice of opportunity for hearing on at least one of them. It seems to me that having the two work sessions first would seem more orderly and then taking action on the last item. So if there's not an objection, I think we will kind of move into a work session mode for these first two items. Is there any objection to that?
No, that's what I'm proposing. And okay. Since they're my portfolio items, if I could just get going on it, it would be helpful.
Seeing none, we will move into the work sessions and let us know which one you prefer to take up first.
Okay. I would like...
A quick
question. Go ahead.
I was kind of confused, too. So I thought we were maybe scheduling work sessions. So, Brian, if you can go over the plan for the work sessions and then how it relates to the one that we had scheduled for today, just kind of just bring me up to speed on sort of the overall plan and timeline here. That'd be great.
Sure. Well, the plan was when I was going through email last night, checking out the schedule for today, I noticed that we had two overlapping. A work session was already previously scheduled for NSP at 9 o'clock. Then there was another notice for a special meeting at 9 o'clock, all NSP related, all cold weather event related. My impression yesterday when we left the meeting is that we would have the work sessions, and then if needed, and I think it's likely, we'll move into a motion on the tariff monthly adjustments, do that at the end. So I had it down. I had visited with Steve last night. What about 10 o'clock, Steve? We had it down, but then a third one was moved in. So I'm sorting it out as well based on what was put down.
If I may, Commissioner. So this should be one work session with those two separate cases.
Correct.
At the same time. We just needed to notice both of them because there's information in each in both of them that I think you will be considering in this matter. Ultimately, the 21-9 will be the one that you'll likely take action on. 21-102 was our initial investigation into the cold weather event for NSP Natural Gas. So there's information in that docket, and there's information in the 21-9 docket as well. So it's intended to be one work session with both cases noticed.
Right. Why don't we just move into, I don't know if there, why don't we move into what I think will probably be, I don't think any of it's terribly complicated, but move into BK2 first and just to see if there are any questions. I think I laid out my, what I was thinking, why I'd like to look at bringing NSP and the company in for a hearing related to their overall request, which is the 240 for a residential and then other amounts for industrial, et cetera. And I think I probably said what I needed to say yesterday. I gave about a half a dozen reasons, provided about a half a dozen reasons, I would say, in terms of why I think it's important to bring the company in for a hearing. So I'm not sure I need to provide anything more on that in terms of my desire other than getting a feel from the other two commissioners on how they feel about that. You provided input yesterday, so I think I know where everyone is at, but let's just verify that that hasn't changed overnight. So, Chair Fedorchak, thoughts?
No, I think my position is the same. And as I understand it today, you're proposing to do the notice of opportunity for hearing on potential that would allow us to do potential interim rates after that hearing notice expires, if and then at the same time simultaneously you intend to follow up with a notice in coming days on a more formal hearing process on this
right.
issue.
And I think that is correct, although I wouldn't say that I was the originator of the interim rate proposal. I think that was Commissioner Chrisman that proposed that. I understand wanting to get this moving in terms of starting to recover what will likely be at least some amount. And it could wind up still being the full amount that the company is requesting, but we won't know until we go through the hearing process and get to that point when we get to that point. But Commissioner Chrisman, do you have any issues with bringing NSPN for a hearing?
I do not, and so if I'm understanding the proposal right, at our next regularly scheduled meeting, which I think is about the 9th, we would actually then have two notices, one that would be to set up, one would be a notice that I assume by then we would have set up either a formal or an informal hearing with them on the long-term solution, the investigation that you've called for. And the other one would be a notice of opportunity, and so that before the end of June comes, we could establish the interim recovery time. Is that correct?
I don't think the notice of opportunity for hearing would be on the next meeting. I think that would be, if we agree on that, that would be taken care of today. So then on the next meeting, if I'm understanding this correctly, it would just be a notice of hearing to bring the company in.
Right. So on towards the end of this meeting, we're prepared to issue the notice of opportunity that gives us optionality to do interim basis or final basis by the end of June, allowing some sort of rate to start on July 1st, if that's what the commission desires. If you would like, on the next meeting, I can schedule either an informal or a formal hearing with the company, and we can get that notice of hearing. Well, if it's an informal, we don't issue a notice. But if it's a formal hearing, we would want to issue a notice of that probably by the next meeting.
Right. That's what I would advocate, would be a notice of hearing. We've had an informal with the company, yeah. And my fear is that if we went back into another informal, they give another presentation. Yes, we can talk about it, but just two different procedures to get to the same endpoint. And I think being more thorough is better. And I think a formal hearing. Better serves what I'm looking for.
Okay. That all sounds good to me, and I see that late yesterday, but I received it just for the meeting here. The company has provided us about 8 pages of information answering 9 questions that staff had sent them, and then providing several pages of graphics. And so that'll, I think, help cultivate what that future meeting could be about. I'm sure some of the questions in our minds are probably answered here, but maybe not all of them. So I think the way it's been described, I'm comfortable following through. But it looks like Mr. Fahn has something to say. Go ahead.
Yes. The only thought that I had was whether you wanted to visit with the company about the proposal to do interim rates before that actually happens. And if you did, then you might have an informal soon, very soon as well.
Why would we do that, Pat? Just because they've laid out a proposed rate already. I was assuming we kind of follow that and then adjust accordingly if we changed it.
Yeah, it seems like we would be in the interim agreeing to what they asked for, so I don't know that we need to consult with them.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't believe we'd have to consult with them either. The one question I do have, and I think Jack described it yesterday, drafting an interim, putting an interim rate in place that gives us the flexibility to do whatever it is that we need to do if the $240 request was to change, if that became a different number. So this is really, I guess we'll have to talk about what we want the interim rate might be, what the thoughts are on that, and how far that would extend to keep. Well, I think that's already been defined, correct, as Chair Fedorchuk just indicated. It's already been put in place in terms of what the company is proposing. If we were to follow that, that's put in place, that's buttoned up, so to speak, but then we have the flexibility to adjust as needed going forward.
We could do nearly anything you would desire. So the company made an initial proposal. Based on our last informal, they made a number of additional one additional filing that laid out other options that kind of lined up with what you were requesting at that informal. So we could go forward on an interim basis with any of those options. So we could say in an order that would happen late in June that this rate is approved on an interim basis subject to adjustment or refund and or refund to be finally decided. You know, I don't know if we want to give ourselves a deadline or if we can just kind of leave it open-ended yet. And then you would ultimately decide what the final rates or any adjustments to it would be at the end of this proceeding.
Okay, so it would be worded in such a way that the interim rate will be X effective on X date, with the understanding that recovery is subject to change pending the final outcome of the formal hearing, the continued investigation, something to that effect?
Correct.
Commissioner Crispin, did you have a dollar amount that you were thinking on the interim recovery proposal that you shared?
Well, I think it would be moving forward with the dollar amounts that had been previously discussed, where I can't remember the total amount of the recovery, but it was to be collected, you know, as designed in the various customer classes, starting July 1st, and I think it was for 14 months. In this case?
We had a number of... So the initial proposal, I think, was 23 months.
Yeah.
We asked for a couple of different versions of 14 months. I don't recall if we had any other...
Well, their normal cycle starts on a September 1st, right?
I believe that's correct.
So this was supposed to be for 14 months because we were going to start July 1st and then next year be back on cycle again.
Correct.
So that's the one that I was referencing.
Sure. And even at the 14 months, there was a couple of different options of where you would start that summer rate. If you started at 50%, a 50% seasonal, 25% seasonal, there's some different options. Yeah.
And I didn't have strong feelings. I don't know if either of the other commissioners do about... I have strong feelings that I want to move forward with that, but the 14 months, but starting July 1st, but I don't have strong feelings about whether it should be the 50% seasonal adjustment or the 25% seasonal adjustment. It's not a huge difference one way or the other, but maybe one of you has strong feelings about that?
No, I don't have strong feelings.
To put that into some context, so the 50% seasonal with 14 months, so NSP bills on a therm basis rather than a decatherm. So it's just I think we're used to talking about decatherms because that's what we started out with MDU. So to put that in comparable terms, a 50% seasonal would put the summer rate at about $5 per decatherm, $4.98 per decatherm. That's the 50% seasonal for 14 months. The 25% seasonal for 14 months would jack the summer rate up to $7.25 per decatherm.
And what's an average customer using in the summer, 3 to 4? And I know it varies, different scenarios, but...
I would say 1 to 2.
1 to 2.
During the summer, the straight summer months when there's no heating.
With hot water, that's the hot water heater, if...
Hot water and some stove usage.
Right. So I think a typical home has a hot water heater. It has, of course, their gas furnace. And that's, I think, probably the most common combination. Some might have a gas stove on top of that. Some might have a fire pit.
Yep.
Or hook it up to their Weber.
There's a number of those, outdoor fire pits and things like that.
So the 50% you said was $498. So it'd be about a $10 a month. In June, July, August, and September, you're going to start to touch a little bit on maybe late September, people turning their furnace on just a little bit to take the edge off in the cool evenings, and then October, November, it all begins again.
Well, with the 14-month 50% seasonal, so that summer rate is $4.98 per decatherm, and then the winter rate would be $2.49 per decatherm. So,
well, I think that is...
I'm looking at the chart that doesn't work. Average summer winter bill impact versus in the 25 versus 50. Mm-hmm. In the 50... For residential, the average summer bill impact is $10. The average winter bill impact is $30. That's for the 50% seasonal. And for the 25% seasonal, the average summer bill impact is $15. And the average winter bill impact is $22. So it's like $5 to $8 difference in the seasons per month.
Well, if the commission wants to be consistent with how we handled the MDU case... We heavied up in this, so to speak. We smoothed it out, meaning there's more emphasis on the summer charge on per therm basis for NSP. It was on a per decatherm basis for MDU. I think there's going to be some type of recovery necessary because of the cold weather event. I'm cognizant of that. I just don't think it's possible to get away from that completely, but if we're trying to smooth it out, the first scenario where winter bills would, if you're using 20 decatherms, it's going to spike by, what, $50?
It'd be more like it's not 100.
Did you say?
50 times 5?
Well, I
thought it was $250.
I thought it was 250.
Oh, sorry, you're correct.
Okay, so you're talking a $50 increase in a month like January or February. That's too much in terms of placing that much emphasis on, mathematically when I'm looking at it. Sorry. Family. Family's dinging me. So it's not about the case. So just to clarify, they just missed me. It's been an hour and 25 minutes, so. No. I think that's the wrong. The one scenario where it would spike by, in the two coldest winter months, if it's January and February, it's going to spike by $50 or even a little bit more. I think that's too much in the winter months when heating bills are already high. And to only have a $5 to $10 impact in the summer, it's inverted in my opinion. And yes, I understand people have air conditioning and whatnot, but Not everyone runs the air conditioner hot and heavy either. I'm looking at it more from a low-income household perspective. Or if they can open up the windows, they'll open up the windows. And when it gets blazing hot, they might turn on the air. It's probably a window air conditioner in a lot of cases. But that really throws it out of kilter for them, and they're the ones who are most sensitive to, oh, this is priced out.
The 25% seasonal is closer to what we, how we did MDU. It's not exactly 25% in that case, but it's closer to it. If you're looking at consistency's sake,
I'm comfortable leaving it up to the portfolio holder to choose between one of those. I think they're close enough to. I'd be comfortable with either one.
As am I.
Well, I'd like to defer, though. What are your thoughts? Because you wanted to get this moving.
Well, and I think we are getting it moving by taking either action to move forward on the 14-month time frame with the interim rates. I think we are moving forward and accomplishing that goal, whether it gets down to the 50% seasonal versus 25% seasonal. As long as it's one of those two that we've discussed, there's pros and cons to each. And so I don't have strong feelings about which we choose.
I'm in the same boat, but I mean, if I was picking, I would probably pick the 25%.
Victor, did you say that was closer to the MDU one?
Yes, it is.
For that reason, you know, the consistency point, I probably would too. But other than that, I, again, don't have real strong feeling which one.
Okay, well, I think it's settled.
Okay.
Okay, so that component, and the notice of opportunity that will follow before too long, because we have a 10 o'clock coming up as well. And we might just be wrapping this up, you know, when I'm looking at, I don't know if there's any further discussion on moving toward, in all likelihood, what I think will be a formal hearing. We have a little bit of flexibility between now and the next meeting too.
Sure.
But I also realize that if we're going to go that direction, you have to start lining up dates. You have to start looking at an ALJ.
Correct.
It's not quite as time sensitive because some recovery is taking place. But at the same time, none of us want this to drag out. So,
So if you would like, I mean, it kind of sounds like we're getting to the end of some of the discussion. So the response we received yesterday, I'd like to point you guys to just a few items in there that I think may help you kind of frame up your thoughts on this. So if you go to page 5 of that filing, it's kind of one of the first graphs. This page is, MDU gave us a similar graph showing, so the blue bar at the bottom of that page is their firm contracted gas purchases. The gray piece of that is storage, and then the orange part of it is what they're exposed to for the daily markets. I think it just kind of helps frame up how their gas purchases normally operate. And again, this is going to be different than what MDU's was. MDU has a lot higher storage capacity than NSP or any other utility in North Dakota. But this kind of helps show why the exposure level was as high as it was.
Can you give us what would the graph look like for MDU? I don't have that in front of me. How big would the gray bar be, Victor?
Closer to half.
I have it here. Give me a sec.
Is that about 45% of their projected gas delivery? I think roughly it would almost double, correct?
Probably pretty close to double.
Okay.
filing. Okay. So, figure out where I can put this. Yeah. So I can send this to you, Commissioner. So the in MDU's case, the storage basically the only time MDU was exposed to the daily market was for February, looks like approximately February 7th through maybe the 16th. There was a small amount of exposure. The scale is just so different, so I'm trying to...
Yeah.
Let me just snap you a picture of this and text it to you.
I'm kind of remembering, as you say that, seeing just like piece extending beyond into the daily market for some of those days. But
yeah.
So it was almost between their firm and their storage, they only had a small amount that they had to purchase from the daily market.
Correct.
For a few days.
Correct. Correct. So so on the NSP side, the orange bar is considerably smaller on MDUs, primarily because of that storage.
Sure. The storage is the correct?
Correct.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that is a big difference.
And it also shows their demand over that same time period. I mean, if you're looking relative to the MDU sheet, which commissioners, there was another handout behind the top one there that had the example of MDUs for your reference purposes. NSP's demand lasted far longer than MDUs on this kind of relative scale.
And that's really a weather-related issue, right?
Right, right.
Is it weather only, or is it the amount that these companies rely on other energy for their electric supply?
I mean, that was certainly a big driver of the spike in prices.
But
I think a lot of this
point, I quickly glanced through NSP's response here, the 8 pages that we got this morning, and it seemed like they said the contracting for the gas for electric versus their gas customers is completely separate, so they weren't like taking from the gas customers and using it for their electric service.
Yes, that's correct, Commissioner. So on NSP's system, they didn't kind of cross-pollinate there and use storage gas that was allocated for natural gas customers and use it for the electric generation side. I was simply saying that the gas prices racing up as high as they did, one of the primary drivers was the electric generation needs across the country, really.
Well, yeah, for sure, and the lack of gas because of all those gas facilities in Texas freezing up.
Yes. So that was one chart I thought was interesting to look at. I think it helps frame up a little bit some of the thoughts. And then if you go back a couple more pages to page 7, the first chart there shows the residential cost of gas adjustment for all 4 of our North Dakota gas utilities. Back to 2016. So, I mean, this is a good, 5 years of data. Maybe not quite 5 years, 4.5. in any case, I think NSP was intending to show historically their purchasing strategy has worked out up until this little event.
Mm-hmm. So, Victor, what are your thoughts on this and how to best proceed?
So, I generally like informal hearings better than a formal, simply because they're better discussions. If we're concerned about data, we can get just as much data for an informal as we can for a formal type of a hearing. I just prefer the format of an informal, like I said, so that we can have discussions rather than almost scripted questions where it's difficult for the parties to respond. You know, during an informal, if there's something anyone has a problem with, we simply raise that problem as it happens. Where in a formal hearing process, we have to wait until it's our turn to ask the questions and hope everybody remembers the context of how that question was asked and answered.
Is there any difference in how much digging we can do in an informal versus a formal?
No.
Is an informal less expensive?
Certainly. I mean, the informal, we wouldn't need an administrative law judge at all. We can simply use the staff that we have to run it.
Well, and I think also a factor would be if we anticipated that someone was coming in with conflicting information, we would want to be in a formal setting so we can take conflicting information, like when we have advocacy staff. But if we are not, if we're just basically drilling down and getting a chance to question them further, we're not really in that format. So I think, too, an informal could work in this case.
Sure. And it's, again, not trying to say that's the only thing that can work. It's just my personal preference on having a better discussion, if the discussion is truly what we're after.
Brian, what in your mind are the advantages of the formal? Because I think you feel pretty strongly about that. So I'm open to your thoughts on what the advantages are to that approach.
I think the biggest advantage in my estimation, even though it's procedurally, we can essentially get the same thing either way. For all practical purposes, I understand that. But to me, I think it elevates the process. And from a point of transparency for the ratepayers themselves, I think I just think that is something we owe to the ratepayers. But with that said, I appreciate the fact that these were essentially the questions that I had asked when the document that came in this morning. Those are the questions that during my meetings with Victor and Pat and Jack, and I think Brian was in on the last one, I had sent some questions. And I don't know if there were any additional questions beyond that.
No. I think they responded to those two separate sets of questions that we had based on those meetings. You know, and then they provided some additional context.
I will say this. What I would, if given my choice, what I want to do is, on this question, as long as we're moving forward with the interim rates starting July 1st, I want to support whatever Brian wants to, because on areas where I'm the portfolio holder, I guess I want pretty good latitude on whether to have a formal hearing or an informal hearing or just a work session or something like that. You're the one who is dug the most deeply into this, and if you want a formal hearing, then that's what I support, and if you want an informal, then that's what I support, and I think we can get it scheduled by our next regular meeting and have it on scheduling and move forward with it. And so I guess I just think that the portfolio holder needs latitude on this.
I think what I'd like to do is, again, I think we're all in the same boat, having just glossed over the document that we received this morning and with very limited time to really take a hard look at it. I appreciate the explanation on a few of the items, a few of the answers. I'd like to look at it over the weekend and then just connect with staff. Pat, you're connect with your team, Victor, et cetera, and Jack and the others. And I think I'll probably be better in a better position to say, okay, I think we could effectively utilize an informal versus a formal, or maybe not. I think it just remains to be seen after reading the data. And I've got other questions, and I'll have to see how they weave in. And I realize we can make more data requests and information requests from the company. We're not prohibited from just stopping at this. We can put more out there, which I think is helpful to have this in advance as well. Certainly.
That's a good point, Commissioner. If any of you have additional questions on this that haven't been answered by any of this, please let me know. We'll get those out to the company as soon as we possibly can so that you have adequate time to review the responses.
Yeah. And I've got a few in mind, but it's possible as I read, it might be embedded in the information that they have. I glossed through one section, and I don't think it's there, but we'll find out.
Certainly.
Okay. Anything else on this?
Sounds good. I'm supportive of that approach and whatever, Brian, you'd prefer in terms of the procedure as well.
I do have one last question, and that is, you know, we're looking at an event that's already occurred. What would be the proper procedure to address a plan going forward? And just a hypothetical. So this isn't, well, I think this is, they're not as effective as they could be in their procurement of gas, for example. Can that be weaved into this proceeding, or would that be after we get through this? Let's just say hypothetically that we felt that it would be better if they were more aggressive in their beginning of the month contracting. And again, this is just a hypothetical. Sure. But as an example, on a going forward basis, because I think in part this is, okay, we have to address what happened. But also, I want assurances that if another cold weather event occurs in the future, I'd like to ideally have the assurance that they can better protect customers from dramatic price spikes. So, Jack, you just walked into the room. Or does that have to be another proceeding or another action, so to speak, on the commission's part?
Commissioner Crosius, if we're proceeding going forward with the notice of hearing, I think this is something we could wrap into that same proceeding as well. We just have to notice it correctly.
Okay. So it'd be a part of the same, it'd be the same case. It would just be
There's a good chance that we may open up a separate case for that specifically, but we may be able to actually incorporate that into the existing case as well. We'll review that, and from the standpoint of just processing it, we would be able to proceed probably concurrently with the other issue.
Okay, but a separate, and not just a single out NSP. I'm thinking of the others as well.
Well, I guess if it's outside of looking at NSP, then we'd probably have to do something a little bit different. But if this is specifically to this utility, we'd be able to probably contain it within the current notice of hearing.
Because the one certainty is whether it's a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, there will be another extreme cold weather event. And not the kind that we're used to, but the kind that people in the southern states, midsection of the country, aren't used to. And we're, it's bothersome to me that we're at the mercy of the Texas markets to the degree that we are, because we can't control whether or not they provide proper funding to winterize their facilities, for example. And yet it has a, or we certainly have no control over whether or not their wellhead production, wellheads freeze up or don't freeze up. I mean, that's not something we can control in terms of telling their industry, well, here's how you're going to go about it in the future. But, and I know they're balancing long-term cost as well, but it just creates a, it's bothersome that, you know, we could turn around and be faced with the same exact scenario and the same type of price spike unless we thoroughly vet what they're doing and, you know, is there a better way?
So I actually was thinking that what you're talking about and looking at, you know, the future and the company's methods of obtaining gas in the future, I thought it would be part of our extreme cold weather event investigation. Isn't that kind of a ultimate result of that investigation to determine whether the company has policies on procuring gas are adequate and appropriate?
I would presume that they're very intertwined, and that's why we could probably, whether we have to open up a separate docket and run them concurrently or do it under the same current open docket, we'd be able to process them. Yep. Simultaneous.
Okay, so we do. We have options. We have options. Okay.
So, in order to carry forth, as we've talked about this morning, do we need to pass the motion that was sent out in advance on the notice of opportunity for hearing at this meeting, or did we decide that that was part of what comes forth at the next regular meeting?
I think the preference would be if we can take up the motion and notice at this meeting.
Okay. So I don't have anything in addition to talk about or share. I'm ready to move into the next.
Nor do I. I would be ready to move into the special meeting BK1, which was the motion part of it. If you are Commissioner Fedorchuk,
I am.
Okay, Commissioner Gracious,
and we're under the correct umbrella. Procedurally still?
Yes. Well, let's make sure the recording's on.
Hang on a second. Yeah, let's do that. That'd be the safer way to do it. Okay. Go ahead and do it.
Are we going to close out the work session and then move?
We're going to close out the work session.
Then move into the...
We're going to separate the two tapes.
Okay. So we'll wrap up this work session and resume... with the special meeting in a few moments.